The Believer by Gabriella Haddock. Chapter 1. Like Sheep. It is 8:45 on the 21st of March, the first morning of spring. The sun is already shining and it is obviously going to be a beautiful day. At this hour, the city streets are full of people hurrying to work. The people seem happier than usual, perhaps because of the warm weather. One young man moves quickly along the street towards a large blue and white sign. The sign says, Underground. The young man enters the tube station, goes to the ticket office and buys a ticket. Then he goes down some steps. He walks along several tunnels, turning left and right, and then down some more steps until he finds the platform he wants. The platform they told him to go to. Several people are already waiting on the platform, reading newspapers or looking impatiently at their watches. The young man looks up and down the platform, but sees nothing unusual. No uniforms, no policemen. For a few moments he relaxes. His name is Harb Malik, and he is 18 years old. He comes from Leeds, a large industrial city in the north of England. Harb's parents come from Pakistan, but Harb is British. He was born in Leeds. He is wearing blue jeans, a clean white T-shirt and a red baseball cap. On his back, he is carrying a large blue rucksack. He looks like a young person on holidays, except for one thing. He does not look happy. On the contrary, he looks very, very afraid. Harb has to wait 25 minutes before a train arrives. But while he waits, he does not take the heavy rucksack off his back. He does not sit down on one of the yellow plastic seats behind him. He stands completely still on the platform, looking straight in front of him. Sweat is running down his face. Now the platform is full of people who want to take the train. Finally, the train arrives. Its doors open with a loud hissing sound. Harb moves towards the nearest carriage and gets on. He looks around him. All the seats are already taken, so Harb remains standing in the centre of the carriage near the doors. Just then, at one end of the carriage, he sees a group of children getting on the train with their teacher. The children cannot be more than 7 or 8 years old. Harb's heart begins to beat very quickly. For a second, he thinks about getting off the train. But at that moment, with the same loud hissing noise as before, the doors of the carriage close behind him. He takes a handkerchief from his pocket and begins to dry his face. "Are you all right, love?" a voice says. Harb turns. He looks at the young woman standing beside him. She has black hair and big dark eyes like his sister Tasmin. "You don't look well at all," she continues. Harb doesn't know what to say. He stares at the young woman. She looks worried. He sees that under her light raincoat she is wearing a nurse's uniform. I'm okay, he says finally. I'm just a bit hot, that's all. It must be the warm weather. Your rucksack must be very heavy, she says. Why don't you put it down on the floor for a few minutes? No, really, I'm okay, Harb says quickly, his eyes full of panic. All right, love, the woman says. You know best. With that, she turns away from him and opens the newspaper she is carrying. Harb looks at his watch. It is 9:28. He looks at the people in the carriage, waiting for the train to move again. Some are reading, some are listening to music, but most of them are doing nothing, just sitting or standing there, like sheep. There are office workers, businessmen, students, tourists, and the children and their teacher. They all have one thing in common, and only Harb knows what it is. He knows that in exactly 2 minutes, all these people are going to die. His rucksack contains 12 kilos of homemade explosives and a detonator. A wire runs from the detonator to a small digital alarm clock. In 2 minutes, the alarm will go off. The noise of the train fills his ears. His heart is beating even faster than before. He tries to think of his instructions. They told him to stay calm. They told him not to panic, and they told him to think of the cause. "I have to do it," he says to himself. "I have no choice. It's too late to go back." "Sorry, love," says the young woman beside him, looking up from her paper. "I didn't hear you. What did you say?" Harb looks at her, his eyes wide. "I have to do it," he screams. "I have to do it." But no one hears him. For at that moment there is a blinding, deafening explosion. It is exactly 9:30 on the first day of spring. Chapter 2. A Great Opportunity. Tasmin was 1 year younger than Harb. Even so, she was like a big sister to him. When he had problems, he came to her room to talk about them and to ask her for advice. They lived with their parents in a small red brick house in a poor part of Leeds. Their house was surrounded by dozens of rows of other red brick houses exactly like theirs. The streets were dirty. Many people in the area didn't have jobs. When the weather was fine, they stood in the street and smoked and talked. Many of them were Muslims, mainly from Pakistan and Bangladesh. The young men dressed like young people everywhere, but the older ones often wore long beards and traditional clothes. The women, young and old, often wore scarves to cover their hair. One evening, not long after Harb's 17th birthday, a black and white police car stopped outside their house. Two police officers got out, a man and a woman. The woman knocked on the door. Mahmoud Malik, Harb's father, opened it. A look of surprise and worry appeared on his face. "I am Sergeant O'Connell," the woman said, "and this is PC Hill. We want to talk to you about your son." "About Harb?" Mahmoud asked. "Is he in some kind of trouble?" "Yes, I'm afraid he is," Sergeant O'Connell said. "May we come in?" They went into the small, tidy living room and sat down. Harb's mother, Farida, came in from the kitchen. She stood at the door of the living room, listening silently. She looked very worried. "This afternoon we arrested a group of young men," the policewoman began. "They were stealing things from a supermarket in the high street. All of them were drunk. One of them hit a shop assistant who tried to stop them. Fortunately, the shop assistant is okay and doesn't want to..." "But what has this got to do with my son?" Mahmoud asked. "Harb was at school this afternoon. He goes to the technical college. He is studying to become an electrician." "I'm sorry, Mr. Malik," said Sergeant O'Connell, "but Harb stopped going to school more than a month ago. He was one of the boys we arrested." Mahmoud Malik was shocked. He sat with his mouth open, unable to speak. "He is only a young boy," said the policewoman, "and he doesn't have a police record yet, so we want to give him another chance. But he's in a group of boys who are older than him. We know these other boys. They are troublemakers. But your son admires them and does what they tell him to do. He's easily influenced. If he stays in this group, sooner or later, he's going to get into serious trouble. That's why I think you should come down to the police station and take him home with you. You are his father. You must talk to him. Make him change his ways before it's too late." Mahmoud went to the police station and brought Harb home. He was angry with his son, but he did not shout at him. He wanted to speak to him as one adult to another. He tried to be calm. "What are you trying to do?" he asked. "Do you want to destroy your life? Do you want to go to prison? Do you want to break your mother's heart?" Harb looked at the ground, but said nothing. "Are you not ashamed of yourself?" Mahmoud asked. "Drinking alcohol and stealing and fighting? Is this how a good Muslim should behave? Think, my son, what do you want to do with your life?" But Harb didn't answer his father. He was ashamed, of course, but also confused and angry. He didn't understand his feelings. He didn't know what he wanted. Later that evening, he went to see Tasmin in her room. He told her, "Don't ask me to explain what happened. I don't understand anything anymore. These days I feel completely lost. I don't know why I'm alive. I want my life to count for something, but it's nothing, nothing at all. I feel useless, and my life has no meaning. And do you think that drinking whiskey with Saif and Hussein and your other friends is going to help you? Tasmin asked. Is stealing from supermarkets going to give meaning to your life? Harb shook his head. For a moment, Tasmin thought he was going to cry. What should I do? He asked. Well, said Tasmin, after thinking for a few minutes, first you should tell our parents that you're sorry for all this trouble. You don't know how worried they are. Tasmin was right. That night, Mahmoud and Farida lay awake in bed. They were unable to sleep because they were thinking about Harb. What should we do? Asked Mahmoud again and again. How can we get him away from the influence of these older boys? I have an idea, says Farida. Why don't we send him to visit his uncle Mumtaz in Pakistan? He will be able to see where his family comes from. When he sees the poverty there, perhaps he will begin to understand the opportunities he has here in England. And also, as you know, my brother is a very religious man. Harb can learn much from him. It is a good idea, says Mahmoud. After that, he lay in the dark thinking about his wife's suggestion. The following morning, he began to organise his son's trip to Lahore in Pakistan. And exactly 1 month later, he accompanied Harb to the airport. He put his arms around his son and held him. He said, Harb, this is a great opportunity for you to learn something about life. Don't waste it. I'll try, Harb says. I promise you, Father, I'll try. Chapter 3. A Different Person. Father and son did not meet again until almost 11 months later. Mahmoud, Farida and Tasmin were waiting at the airport to welcome Harb home. But at first none of them recognised him. They watched the passengers from Harb's flight come through customs one by one, but they couldn't see Harb, for he was no longer wearing his usual jeans, T-shirt and baseball cap. Now he was wearing a pair of baggy Pakistani trousers and a loose shirt that looked much too big for him. Also his skin was darker, burned by the hot sun of Pakistan. But most surprising of all, he now had a long, untidy beard, and his head was completely shaved. Tasmin was the first to recognise him as he walked towards them. Laughing with surprise, she ran to him, threw her arms around his neck and kissed him. My big brother, she said, smiling. What did they do to you over there? Harb looked at her coldly, without the shadow of a smile. They taught me who I am, he said. Then he walked past his sister to greet his parents. In the days that followed, the whole family saw how different Harb was now. Now he rose before dawn to study the Quran. He went to the mosque on Hardy Street 5 times a day to pray. He no longer smoked. He did not drink alcohol. He ate little, as if food was unimportant to him. In the street, he stopped saying hello to non-Muslim friends. Boys he went to school with and knew all his life. Now he said salam only to other Muslims. He rarely laughed or smiled. He no longer came to his sister's room to talk and ask for advice. So, one evening about a month after Harb's return, Tasmin went to his room. He put down the heavy book he was reading and looked at her. Harb, she said, why do you no longer talk to me? What is wrong with you? You're not the same person you were before. What happened in Pakistan to change you so much, to make you so serious? Before you were a happy person, you liked playing football and cricket with the other boys. Now you spend all your time at the mosque or at religious meetings. Before you laughed and joked a lot, now you look angry all the time. Why are you so angry? Don't I have reasons to be angry? He replied suddenly. I am a Muslim. There are nearly 2 million Muslims in Britain, and they are among the poorest people in the country. That's not true, Tasmin said, but Harb paid no attention to her. He continued, look at what is happening to Muslims in Iraq, in Palestine, in Afghanistan, in Kashmir, in Chechnya, everywhere in the world. Thousands die every day, but who knows, who cares? His voice became loud with anger. If a bomb explodes in New York or in Madrid or in London, the whole world stops for 2 minutes of silence. Why is there never a minute of silence for the thousands of dead Muslim children of Iraq? Tasmin began to speak, but her brother shouted even louder. There is one measure for rich Westerners, but a very different one for poor Muslims. Where is the justice? Is Iraqi blood not as important as English or American blood? They talk about the war against terrorism, but it is a war against Islam.
Hab, why are you shouting at me? Tasmin said, with tears in her eyes. I don't know you anymore. It seems as if someone in Pakistan turned on a switch in your head and it made you a different person.
For some minutes, neither of them spoke. Then Hab began again, but this time in a quiet voice.
I am sorry for shouting, Tasmin. If you want to know what happened, I will tell you. But please, come and sit down beside me. We will not have many more opportunities to talk.
Tasmin sat down on the bed beside her brother, and after a few minutes he said, Before I went to Pakistan, I didn't know who I was. My life had no direction, no meaning. But in Lahore, I had good teachers. They showed me that I was a weak Muslim, but even so they welcomed me like a brother. They taught me to think about my identity, about who I am. They asked me why my country, why Britain, was sending soldiers to Iraq to kill my Muslim brothers. I began to see what the Western governments are doing to the people of the Muslim world. They showed me videos of what is really happening in Iraq, in Afghanistan. Dead babies. Women and children horribly... He stopped for a few minutes, unable to continue. Then, what I saw in the videos made me sick. My teachers asked me, What are you going to do about these terrible things? They told me that my tears and my prayers were not enough. They asked me, Do you believe in your religion? I said yes. They asked me, Are you ready to die for your religion? Again, I said yes. Then I began to learn about the jihad, the holy war. They showed me that I must become a holy warrior.
Oh, Hab, said Tasmin, don't you know that violence is forbidden? The Quran forbids the killing of innocent people.
You are only a girl, Tasmin, said Hab, his eyes burning like flames. You cannot understand. Society is at war. If non-Muslims are killing Muslims, then Muslims have the right to kill non-Muslims. We have the right to defend our brothers. This is what I believe.
You are mad, Hab, said Tasmin. This is not my brother speaking. Someone is using you. Can't you see that? You will destroy your life.
I put God at the centre of my life. This world is not important. Compared to paradise, it is nothing, less than nothing. I believe this with all my heart.
What will you do? She asked, her voice sad and tired.
I will wait. I will prepare myself. One day I will receive my instructions. Then I will obey. Chapter 4. One Red Rose. One morning, in the middle of March, to everyone's surprise, the old Hab reappeared for breakfast. He was wearing a pair of jeans and a t-shirt and smiling happily.
What happened to your horrible beard? Farida asked him.
I shaved it off, didn't I? Hab replied, kissing his mother and sister and shaking his father's hand.
What a beautiful morning, eh? Hab said, looking out of the kitchen window. By the way, does anyone know where my baseball cap is?
You didn't go to the mosque for the morning prayer, his father said.
No, but it doesn't matter, Dad. Really, it isn't important any more.
Watching her brother as he sat down and poured himself a cup of tea, Tasmin thought, thank God, my brother is himself again. 4 days later, Hab travelled to London to see some old friends. When he arrived, he took a taxi to a house in Hackney Wick, a poor area in the north of the city. There he met two men he didn't know. The two men talked to him for several hours, giving him instructions and making him repeat them again and again. Then the men gave Hab a map of the London Underground and a heavy blue rucksack. The following morning, Hab became a walking bomb.
So did the young nurse who was standing beside him. So did 22 other people, including women and children, and Christians and Muslims, and people of 9 different nationalities. Many others lost arms and legs or were horribly burned. A week after the explosion, people in many cities around the world observed 2-minute silence out of respect for the victims of the attack. But soon, other stories filled the news, other attacks, other events. Most people forgot Harb's attack. The people who didn't forget were the families and friends of the innocent people Harb killed. Exactly 1 year after Harb's attack, these people decided to hold a small ceremony in memory of the dead. Tasmin read in the newspaper that the ceremony was going to take place on the platform of the underground station where the explosion occurred. The evening before the ceremony, she took the train to London and checked into a hotel. During the ceremony, the platform was closed to normal travellers. When Tasmin arrived, she saw about 100 people standing at one end of the platform. They were people of different ages, different colours, different religions. A priest was speaking to them, but he was too far away for Tasmin to hear his words. She went closer to the group. An imam from a local mosque began to speak. The tragic thing that happened here had nothing to do with religion. It was caused by men who believe that they alone have the answer to the world's problems. Men who are absolutely certain that they alone are right. As we see, their only answer is death and destruction. They don't do these terrible things because they love God. No, they do them because they hate life. Some of the relatives spoke, remembering children, brothers, sisters, parents killed in the explosion. Many put flowers against the wall of the platform. Many left photographs and short written messages. Many wept. Finally, when there was nothing more to say or do, the people shook hands with each other and gradually left the platform. Tasmin walked over to the pile of flowers and photographs. She read some of the messages. Billy, you are such a lovely child. Rita, I miss you so much. For my darling husband, John. The messages were simple, and Tasmin saw that even if the words were different, they all said the same thing. To someone who was dead, each message said, I love you. So much hatred, Tasmin thought. So much love. She put a single flower beside the others, a dark red rose. She stood there for a few minutes more, praying silently. Then she turned and walked quickly towards the steps leading up to the light of day. As she went up towards the street, she heard the sounds of city traffic. For a moment she thought she also heard birds singing. Then she remembered it was the first day of spring.